We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
We have one from Iden Benami. Thank you for the Super Chat, Iden. He says, B, last week I asked you and Ryan Roberts about Dion and his tweets back to Cormani. You and Ryan were okay with it. I wasn't. Any thoughts on his nonsense this week? Still feel the same way about his stuff last week. I thought Cormani was in the wrong last week. I mean, Cormani just did not handle himself well during his recruitment. He didn't handle himself well during his career at Colorado. I have no problem with it. How do I feel about the stuff this week? I think it's actually what you said. It's nonsense. And this is the problem that that Colorado has. There's a lot of things that Dion gets blamed for, gets criticized for that I don't think he should get criticized for. I said this to you all day one. The media is going to hype Dion up hardcore. What's the point of them hyping him up hardcore? So he has further to fall once they start tearing him down. Once things aren't successful, tear him down. That was always sort of the conversation that I've said to you guys. That's what was going to happen. And so to me, I knew that this media pushback was going to come with Dion at some point in time. The problem is that Dion's not helping himself with some of the things that he does. That's just the reality of it. There are things he's saying and doing where it's like, look, I understand you're going to be you, but there's just no need for you to be that. There's no way for you to, no reason for you to do that. There's no reason for your son, who's supposedly the leader of your football team, to say what he said about the other kid that was there. There's no need for that. There's no need for you to, take those petty shots at kids that are departed. And some of the stuff the kid said is like, man, look, you need to be willing to look in the mirror and say, because here's the thing that bothered me about this week. Like, a lot of stuff in the past didn't bother me. That's just Dion being Dion, and you have to let a coach be himself. Like, why should Dion Sanders have to get into coaching and change his personality because it makes you uncomfortable? Right? He shouldn't have to. But just because you can still be yourself and then not be a hypocrite or not be a person who treats people poorly. And one of the things that I've always praised Dion for is he took such joy and pride in developing young men in the past. Well, now he's at Colorado. We're hearing a lot of things that maybe, Dion's putting winning and some other things ahead of doing what's right for developing young men. And when multiple players, like a large chunk of players, are basically saying, this guy treated us poorly. This guy didn't care about us. This guy didn't help us develop. If you're someone who's always taken pride and done a lot of things of that were about developing young men into being successful human beings, not just successful football players, then that's something that should make you look in the mirror. instead of taking little petty shots on Twitter and this the childish, well, my son's going to be a top five draft pick next year. What's your son doing? Like, really? Like, that's the best you got? You got to do that? Like, come on, man. You're better than that, coach. You're better than that. You're someone who says that you take pride in developing young men. And there's a lot of kids that are coming out of your program that don't feel you're doing that. Maybe some of the things you're doing aren't right. Maybe some of them are just kids. Not every kid, look, I don't care who you are. There's kids that left Lou Holtz that were like, that their name under Lou Holtz that were like, man, he didn't care about me. And some of them changed their mind. Some of them don't. You're always going to have that. But when you have this many kids leaving your program feeling like you didn't care about them, and you're someone who has always taken pride in being someone who cares about developing young men, which is the number one responsibility, in my opinion, of a coach, is if you're winning, but you're not doing that, then the winning means nothing. Yes, winning is important. If you don't win, you don't have a job. But if you're sacrificing developing young men and making our society better because of what you're teaching young men about being men, right? If a football player is leaving your team and you taught him all these things about being a football player, but he doesn't know what it means to be a loving husband and a supportive husband, and a husband who understands the right way to treat someone. If he doesn't understand the principles that go into being a good father, that go into being a good business owner, that go into being a good employee, that go into being whatever he's going to do in life, then does it really matter that you won all these games? Was it really worth it? I don't think it was, because I think you can do both. And there's been plenty of coaches over the years, including recently, that took a lot of pride in, yes, we got to win, but I also care about developing young people. Go listen to Florida State's players. Now, we don't agree with everything that Florida State did and the cheating here and the cheating there, but one thing Bobby Bowden took a lot of pride in was the kind of, yes, winning, but it was the kind of young men that he was putting out into the world. That's not debatable. Dabo cares a lot about that. You ever wonder why so many of Dabo's former players come back and coach for him? It's because of that. There have been plenty of coaches that were that way. Lou Holtz was that way. He not only won at a high level, but he also took pride in what kind of people he was putting out into the world. If you're not doing that, then it doesn't matter. Deion's always acted like he takes pride in that, and I've always respected that about him. But when you hear this many things coming out, and his response is to just honestly act like a petulant child in response to it, I lost respect for him. And I've been a Deion Sanders defender for a long time. But some of the things that he said this week, I'm just like, man, these things that these kids are saying, they're not taking shots at you. They're not saying, oh, he's a bum coach. He's a fraud. He's a phony. They're saying, this guy didn't care about me. This guy made me feel like I didn't matter. This guy made me feel like I wasn't important. His son comes out and says, I don't even remember you. He must have been mid. You're a child when you act that way. You're no leader. You're no guy that I'd want to go to battle with. I'm not following you anywhere because you'll sell me out the minute you need to build up your own brand. I'm not going to play for you. I would have no respect for a guy like that if I was a Colorado. And for his dad to then back that up, no, that's one of those times where you sit and say, hey, son, look, I don't care what this guy says. You can't be like that. That looks bad on you. But they praise that stuff. And that's caused me to lose a little bit of respect for Coach Sanders, because you guys know this. I've been a big defender of him. I said him winning at Colorado is good for the game, but not if he's going to act like this. Not if he's going to be doing – and I don't care about the roster turnover. That's part of the game now. But as I've always said, there's a right and a wrong way to go about this. And the way that Coach Sanders is going about this right now, he should be looking in the mirror saying, why are this many kids leaving my program feeling like I didn't care about them? Right? What am I doing? You can have harsh conversations. Say, look, son, you can't play for me. You can't help us win. So if you're going to be here, I need you to do this, 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 and this. Or you might want to go look somewhere else. There's a way to do that that's the right way or the wrong – that's in the wrong way. And it just seems like the way Coach Sanders is doing it, from what we're hearing from, it's not just one or two kids. This is coming from a lot of different players. It's a bad look, honestly, and it's disappointing because, as I said, I've been a supporter of Coach Sanders. I wanted him to be successful, but the way he's going about it right now, I just I can't support that. That's petty. I would hope that at some point in time he apologizes, and I don't care about publicly. Call those kids up, man, and talk to them. Like, I just, it's a bad look. He's better than that. I think he is anyway. He's better than that.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Walk on carry out, carry off with a super chat. Thank you very, very much. Name the 5 receivers who will get 80% of the targets in 2024. Chris Mitchell, Jaden, I'm just kind of going across. Chris Mitchell, Jaden Greathouse, Jordan Faison, Bo Collins, and one of Deion Colsey or Jaden Thomas. One of those two of receivers. That's my pick. KK Smith is on the verge of being in that conversation as well. Cam Smith, Cam Williams, I mean, could be in that conversation. But those are the ones right now, based on where things are right now, that would get my vote for that. Got a super chat from Christopher Crosby. Christopher says, just look. Thank you for the super chat, by the way, Christopher. Just looked at the spring depth chart on the board. Very impressive roster with more talent coming. Chances Carson Hobbs or Leonard Moore can pass Chance Tucker. Either way, both may have to play, correct? Not both, no. Like, even if there's an injury to one of the four corners, right? So let's say that Leonard Moore passes Chance Tucker. Just for the sake of argument. And he'd be the guy I'd probably give the best chance to do so. If there's an injury, then Chance just slides right back in. I don't know that both freshman corners can beat out Chance. I don't know that either can, but I think one of them will have a shot to do so. But I'd have a hard time with both of them doing it. you'd have to get down to more than two losses before you go there. Because you've also got other things you can do. You've got Rod Hurd, could help you out there a little bit. It's not ideal, but he can help you out there a little bit. There's some other things that you could do to be able to handle that position before you'd have to play both of those freshmen where they have to play. Because your question was may have to play, not they win a spot and they earn a spot and they're playing because they've pushed past Chance. They've both pushed past Chance Tucker. They, one guy gets hurt and now they're both there to play. Come on, having to play, I think they need a lot more than one injury. I think they need more than two injuries before they both have to play, in my opinion. But thank you for the super chat. And you are correct. It is an impressive roster. There's no doubt about it. Aiden Benami asks, are JD Bertrand's short arm something that can hinder his success in the NFL? I know it's a negative, but is it important or easy to overcome? It's very important and it's not easy to overcome. And matter of fact, I mean, it's almost impossible to truly overcome it in the National Football League. So why does short arms matter for a linebacker? Well, really it's threefold, and I'm going to start with like least important to most important. Least important is in the pass game, and this is important, but it's at the bottom of three. In the pass game, a guy that's 6'1" with 29 to 30-inch arms does not have much of a radius to throw around. He's not a guy that's going to be as impactful getting his hands up, to impact the quarterback throwing the ball over the middle of the field. He's going to have a much shorter radius to defend tight ends and running backs, right, because he's just not very long. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah is not taller than J.D. Bertrand. Maybe a half an inch, if at all. He's lighter than J.D. Bertrand. He's got much longer arms than J.D. Bertrand, much bigger wingspan. So he presents himself as a much greater challenge to throw around, even though they're basically the same height. That's number three. Number two is tackling. One of the issues for Drew Tranquil, even in the NFL, is Drew still will have some issues at times as a tackler. Because if you have shorter arms, then it's harder for me to get my arms all the way around you. That's just the reality of it. And that's something that you can overcome it to a degree, tackling technique, going low, knowing how to fight through a stiff arm, taking proper angles, getting in those type of things. But there's going to come times when it's just like, okay, this guy's got an angle to get outside and he's got 32 inch arms and I've got 29 and a half inch arms. And if he puts his hands on my, it's like, okay. So like, Vince is in the back. So Vince, can you hear me? Right. So Vince is starring some channels. So I guarantee you, Vince has done this with both of his boys. They're coming up at him. They're wrestling, and Vince will, I promise you, just like every other day, put his hand right on the kid's forehead, and the kid's flailing. And Vince is laughing. There's nothing he can do about it, right? Because he's just not long enough. Your arms are about half a foot longer than his. Well, then your son gets older, and he's now 3 inches taller than you, and Vince is also dealing with this, and he's got longer issues with you, and you put your hand on your kid's forehead, and you're catching jabs to the gut, right? Because, the length is not there. So that's how length can kind of impact it. I'm sorry, I just needed to make Vince laugh today, everybody, so I appreciate that. But that's kind of what length is. And then the other part where that impacts you is also when it comes to block destruction. So if you've ever, been in, you're wrestling around and a guy gets his hands on you. He's got 3 or 4 inch longer arms than you. He gets his hands on you. You can't get your hands back in his chest. So all you're hoping to do is get his hands off of you. And so when I'm coming to block a guy and we kind of both meet heads and then he locks out and I lock out and he's longer than me, then I'm locked out. He's got me beat, right? I can't get up in his chest for the same reason I was just talking about where, it's like when you got your hand on the smaller person's forehead and they can't get swings on you, right? Same thing, because if we both have our arms extended and we're trying to get leverage and that guy's got much bigger wingspan than me, then he's going to win that battle. So, can you overcome it? Yeah, you got to be great with your hands. You've got to be good at shooting hands down. You've got to be good at doing certain moves to block, destruct against those guys, to get them off your chest. You've got to be good with your hands to keep them from even getting locked on to your chest. Those are all things can be overcome to a degree, but the reality is there's just going to be times you lose because of it. And so when you put those three things together, it can create enough issues to where I don't know that I can have you be an every down player at the next level because of it. Now, there have been guys with short arms that have overcome that, but it gets harder at that level. Drew Tranquil, has short arms. I mean, let me go look up Drew's numbers from the combine, but Drew had very short arms for a guy that's over 6'2". I'm going to pull it up. I think he was like right about 30. So he was 31 and a half inch arms. So a little bit longer than I thought, but he's a guy that's pretty short arms for a guy that's 6'2". I've seen other linebackers like right around 30. I think JD Bertrand was like right around 30. So it can be a problem at times. It's not debilitating, but it can be limiting to a degree. So good question. Iden also asks about Mark Zachary. He says, I love that Mark Zachary doesn't have Twitter. It's wild. Actually, he does have Twitter. Actually, I follow him on Twitter, and I got him as a notification, and I get tweets from him. So yes, he is on Twitter. But he says, Micah Bell leaves the same week Dallas Golden commits. Direct effect. You mentioned it, but you think they directly said to Dallas after Micah left. No, I think what it does is you got Dallas Golden because you were the team to beat for Dallas Golden for months. Did the timing of it impact? Was it impacted by Micah Bell leaving? No, I don't think so. Other than the fact that I believe when Micah left, that the pathway for Dallas to get into the starting lineup was made more clear. I don't think Dallas went from, I'm not sure about Notre Dame, to I'm going to pick Notre Dame because the pathway to playing was opened up. But it's kind of like Notre Dame checks every single box, every one, academically, personality, the way they recruited me, the relationships, the things that I value, that they value are totally in line. It's like they check every box. Now the pathway to playing is even easier. I know I got to earn it. They're not promising me anything, but I do believe that there were some conversations like, look, man, if this is where you want to play and this is maybe where you can help us, there's now an easier path for you coming in and playing as a freshman. I would be shocked if that conversation didn't have some degree. Could that have been the thing that finally sped it up for Dallas? Possibly. I won't say that it wasn't true, but it wasn't like he was never going to commit or may not commit until the signing day, and then this sped up the process. Like, I always felt Dallas was going to commit. When there was the BS rumors coming from that dude that covers that team up north, who we all just love, I said, that's BS. I don't care what he's saying. It's not true. He's just trolling Notre Dame fans, and you all continue to fall for it. It's BS. Because Dallas was always going to pick Notre Dame. The only question was when. And the when was last week or this, last Sunday. So big, big win for Notre Dame. And I'll say this. If Mark Zachary makes a decision soon, which he's saying he will, and if Notre Dame is the school that gets that Mark Zachary, that'll be more impacted by Dallas Gold making a decision than Micah Bell had on Dallas Gold making a decision. Does that make sense? That would be my two cents on that.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go down here. I want to find some questions from someone that we haven't answered one from. Here's one. Phil Berardi. Thank you, Phil. Philip Berardi. Thank you, Philip. Who is your favorite Notre Dame offensive player and defensive player from each of the last three coaching regimes? Well, I can't really say honestly that I had favorite players from the current or past regimes because I try to look at the players differently now than I did before because I cover the team. And there's kids I like and respect. And, of course, there's kids you root for and enjoy. But I don't know that I would say necessarily who favorite players. I will say from the current regime, or the last three, so the three before the current regime, if I were to say, like, who are the best players offensively, it's Quentin Nelson and Will Fuller would be my two on offense that I'd have to look at. And then defensively, it's Jalen Smith. I mean, Jalen Smith was a special, special player. Him and Manti were the two best that we've seen. From the administration before that, that's easier for me to do because I was just a fan during the Charlie Weiss and Ty Willingham and Bob Davey eras. But my favorite players from before then, Charlie Weiss era was easy on offense, is Brady Quinn. I was a huge Brady Quinn fan. The first dog Angela I had, his name was Brady. That's a no-brainer. Defensively, that's a little bit of a tougher one. Oh, man, I completely forgot about Harrison Smith from the Kelly era too. I completely forgot that Harrison Smith was part of that because he played for Charlie for a few years, but he really broke out under Brian Kelly. But defensively, my favorite was probably Tom Zbikowski. Now, he was not the best by any stretch, but he's my favorite to watch. Tom, and I also had a chance to meet Tommy at I coached at Bowling Green's camp when Urban was there. So they would let us come work the camps, you know, because we could go there. I was at Wittenberg and then Muhlenberg at the time. And we would work a lot of those camps because that's where we'd find recruits, you know. And so these were back when they were like, you know, 4 or 5 day camps. It's a lot different than they are the 1 day camps they do now. And so I had a chance to spend a lot of time, as I've said before, with that staff there, and got to know Dan Mullen a little bit during that time there, and watch Coach Meyer coach. And then I'm sure there was other people, but you know, they let me come up during spring and I could watch practices and sit in the film room a little bit with Coach Mullen and learn some things. But, you know, Tommy Zbikowski was at their camp one of the years because they were recruiting him. This is when he was younger. He wasn't hadn't blown up yet. He was younger. And so I got a chance to meet him, really good kid, and got a chance to meet his dad. He was a very interesting fella. But so I always kind of had, like, I wanted him to be successful. And it was funny. I've told this story before, but I remember one of the years at the camp, I think it was, I can't remember which year it was. It might've been 02. But I remember we were there and a lot of the coaches are standing around and Dan Mullen goes, I just watched one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen. I think it was at a Michigan camp. He was at a Michigan camp. And he says, don't hold me to that. Because I just saw one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen at this camp I was at. And everybody's like, oh, who are you talking about? He says, some kid from Ohio. And they're like, who is it? And he's, yeah, this kid named Brady Quinn from Ohio, from Dublin. He's one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen. Like, kid's going to be special at college. And I'm like, all right, cool. I didn't know Brady Quinn was looking at Notre Dame at the time. And then, of course, when Brady Quinn commits, you're like, all right, I hope Dan Mullen's right about that one. But I had a lot of respect for Dan Mullen. I did back then. I mean, he was very helpful for me and helping me learn. But it was also cool that I got a chance to meet Tommy Zbikowski, and just he was a good kid. So I enjoyed watching him play. The Ty Willingham era was a little shorter. I'm trying to think. I don't even remember, like, who would be the guys that were even like a lot of the guys you think about. What's funny is, like, Brady Quinn spent as much time with, you know, offensively, I'd have to probably have to go Julius Jones, right? He'd be my favorite guy on offense. And then I'll go Glenn Earl or Justin Tuck would be my favorite on defense. Be probably my two favorite. Bob Davey era. I'm a quarterback, so I'm always partial to quarterbacks. My answer would have been Ron Paulus, but then I got to live in the same city as Ron Paulus, and he's no longer my answer. But as a kid, it might have been him. But also really – but I know he was with Davey for a couple years as well. But I'd probably go Jerrius Jackson on offense. Defensively, that's a – I'd have to think about who their players were for those teams at the end of the Bob Davey era. I'd have to go back and think about that one a little bit more. But Jerrius Jackson would probably be my pick on offense. And then Lou Holtz era, it's Rocket Ismail and Todd Light were my two favorites during the Lou Holtz era, which was really cool because that was one of the cool things is when I got a chance to meet Todd Light and cover Todd Light and actually got to know Coach Light a little bit. That was pretty cool. Like, that's one of those few, like, kind of fanboyish type of moments I had because I'm like, dude, I grew up watching this guy. Now I get to talk to him and pick his brain and talk football with him. And share memories. Like one time we had, this was after he had, I think after he had left, but we went out to dinner one night and like some of the former players were there in town. And I'm like, this is so cool. I got to meet Andy Heck. I was like, oh man, this is awesome. This is one of the perks of the job. I'm not gonna lie to you. But that was a pretty cool moment for me anyway. Let's see here. Let's go to Lucky Ducks 512. Thank you for the question. Which position group do you expect to see a commitment from in the 25 class? I think we'll see a commitment, and this is no order as far as time chronological. We'll see at least one more receiver commitment. We will see one linebacker, at least one linebacker commitment. We'll see at least one more cornerback commitment. As of right now, I'd say probably one more cornerback commitment. I think they'll get a safety commitment, and then I hope they get a D-line commitment. I don't know who that's going to be, but I hope they get a D-line commitment. I just don't know if they know who that's going to be yet. So we'll have to find that answer out here at some point in time soon. But those are ones where I feel like in 25 that you're going to get commitments from. Jesse Ferguson, which games on Notre Dame's 2024 schedule are tougher than the opener against A&M? Tough place to play, and Notre Dame will be a northern team playing in the Texas heat of early September. You know, I hear a lot about the Texas heat in early September, but I think Vince can attest. We've gone to some camps at Culver in recent years where I didn't really feel like being outside. It was pretty flipping hot. So, yeah, it'll be hot down there, but guys, this isn't like Notre Dame. Like, where that can be more challenging is more so if it's like October and you're kind of in your fall, and then you go down to Florida and play like at Miami and at noon, and it's like 85 and humid. I don't know. I don't know that one's going to be quite as bad. And have they set a time for that game yet? I mean, I would assume there's a chance that's going to be a night game. So I could be wrong on that. I'm actually going to go to the schedule and see if they've set a time for that or not yet. Let me go to this Notre Dame, Texas A&M, and see if they've set a time for that. Yeah, because that's not going to be on NBC. So, yeah, that game is – they have not set a time for that yet, I don't believe. So I'd be willing to bet you that's going to be a night game, which means it won't be quite as hot. You know, maybe they set it at noon and it's the hottest moment of the day and that has an impact, but this is why depth matters so much. But will there be which game on their schedule will be tougher than that one? I think Florida State will be tougher. I think here's the thing you got to remember about Texas A&M. They have talent, there's no doubt, but they're going to be in game one of new systems on both sides of the ball. They're going to have a quarterback coming back who's very talented, but he's played 9 games in his career. Doesn't have a full season of worth of games yet. They're going to have a lot of newcomers. They lost a lot of players. They're learning a new defense. They're learning a new offense. And they don't have a better roster than Notre Dame. So, yes, that's going to be a very tough game. Do I think that's going to be toughest game on the schedule? No, I don't think so. I think USC game could be tougher because, again, it'll be later in the year and Notre Dame will be a little bit more worn down. And Notre Dame's going to be pretty fresh in the opener too, guys. Like, I mean, that's the reality. And they're going to have their depth to hopefully be as good as it'll be all year at that point in time. But it'll be a very tough game. Don't get me wrong. But I think Florida State's got a chance to be tougher. USC maybe. But A&M's going to be probably one of your three toughest games next year. Louisville is going to be tough as well. But with the losses they had in the portal after spring practice, their roster's not quite as intimidating, losing Tyler Barron and the running back who left. And man, if y'all knew the story to that, that is wild. Like, I do not blame Jeff Brohm at all for not having those guys part of his program anymore. It's getting pretty crazy. Rusty Irons, I may be beating a dead horse, but can a walk-on get an NIL contract? Yeah. I mean, actually, I think they have in the past. I mean, I believe there was something a couple years ago where like they did something with the walk-ons because Notre Dame has that, you know, WAPU Nation thing. I think they still do that. I haven't really paid attention, but I think they still do that. But yeah, they can do that. There's nothing where it's only for scholarship players. Now, I don't know what the school can give players. I don't like through the fund collective, but yeah, kids can get NIL contracts because NIL contracts aren't just through the collectives. So I'd have to look and do some research on whether or not that they can give them through the funds or through like the collectives. But if I wanted to go and do an NIL deal with a walk-on to do something for Irish Breakdown, I could do that. There's nothing stopping them from doing that. So, yes, they can do that. And I don't know that that's beating a dead horse, because I don't know that I've ever been asked that question before. Brandon Rouse, this is a good question from Brandon. He says, do you think it's more pressure on Notre Dame to win a title because Michigan just won? Absolutely. Absolutely, Brandon, for a couple reasons. Number one is, obviously, a school from your region just won a title. So you're trying to be – I've said this before. For you to be the big dog in your region, you know, or to be the big dog in the country, you've got to be the first big dog in your region. And right now, Notre Dame is third in their region behind Ohio State and Michigan. And I would argue that prior to last year, I would argue Notre Dame is still ahead of Michigan. They had the same number of playoff berths. Their equal wins and losses against each other. NFL draft success was similar. Michigan slightly ahead. Notre Dame had, I believe, had two of the three most recent games, I believe, were wins for Notre Dame. Michigan won in 19. Notre Dame won in 18. And I believe their most recent game before that would have been 14, which Notre Dame won, I believe. And, you know, just I felt Notre Dame was a better program. Well, that changed last year. And really the last 2 years started that. But last year certainly changed that. And Michigan jumped ahead of Notre Dame when they won the title. The other part about it, Brandon, is Michigan is not doing well in NIL. They don't recruit top five classes. Notre Dame has out-recruited Michigan in several years. So a lot of the excuses that Notre Dame is, you can't win games playing this way. You can't win games being O-line driven. You have to have skill. You have to have this. You have to have that. And I think Michigan went out and showed we had good skill. You know, Roman Wilson, where was Roman Wilson drafted? Like third round, I believe. Let me look that up. I know Blake Corum was drafted in the third round. You know, their quarterback was taken high, but, you know, he didn't carry the team. Like, they didn't have any stars. Like, Michigan had the quarterback taken in round one, and then the rest of their guys were day two and day three draft picks. So, like, a lot of excuses people use for Notre Dame, you can't use anymore because Michigan won that way, or Michigan won with similar issues or similar restrictions or whatever the case may be. So, I think what they did, Brandon, is a lot of the excuses are gone. So you can't use, well, you can't win in a place like Notre Dame anymore. Why? Michigan can win. You've got things going better for you. Well, you can't recruit well enough to, and you've recruited better than Michigan has. A lot of the best players that Michigan's had in recent years, Notre Dame flat out could have had. They could have had Mason Graham if they wanted him. He could have gotten into Notre Dame. They didn't recruit him. They could have had J.J. McCarthy. They chose Tyler Buchner over him. And I'm not retroactively looking back and criticizing Notre Dame for that, because I thought Tyler Buchner was better. And I think if Tyler Buchner would have been developed better, he could have been a really, really dynamic player. Just didn't work out that way. They could have had Cornelius Johnson if they wanted him. There's a lot of players that Michigan had that if Notre Dame wanted them, they could have had them if they would have been able to win the recruiting battle. I'm not saying like 90% of the roster would have chose Notre Dame over Michigan. I'm not saying that at all. Notre Dame recruited Will Johnson, and he chose Michigan. What I'm saying is, these were kids that could have got into Notre Dame. You can't use the – like Zach Zinner. Zach Zinner would have absolutely come to Notre Dame if Notre Dame would have offered him. And I think they offered him, but he wasn't a take for them. They turned him down. I didn't understand it at the time. I didn't agree with it. I understood it. I explained it, but I didn't agree with it. It didn't make sense. You had a two-man offensive line class that year. They turned down Roger Rosengarten and Zach Zinner in the same class. That was a bad decision. Very bad decision. You could have had him. There's several players like that at Michigan. So them winning has flat out, absolutely 100% said to Notre Dame, the clock is ticking. All your excuses are gone. It's time to go win. The good news is, as I said, I don't think Marcus Freeman is going to be someone who necessarily is going to be bothered by that and is going to say, hey, look, yeah, that's exactly what the standard is for us. So we're going to go out there and win and be successful and get it done. So, I think there's absolutely more pressure, Brandon, on Notre Dame to win now. Absolutely. Got a super chat from Garen Knutson, my man. Thank you for that. Has there always been a time where fans felt it necessary to tear down players on their own team in order to advance their favorite player? Or is this a modern phenomenon that is more visible with social media? I would kind of say it's always been that way. It's just more visible now. I remember having conversations as a kid where I'd be arguing that Barry Larkin was the Reds' best player, and somebody else would be like, oh, he can't, blah, 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 blah. It's Eric Davis, or later on it's so-and-so, or it's this guy, or it's that guy. You know, I remember having conversations with people when I was in college where, you know, there's a little bit of, like AOL became a thing, like when I was maybe a junior in high school, and then started using it. And gosh, I remember, you know, you hear the grinding to sign on, and then you'd go to ESPN.com and it'd take like 10 minutes to load. And yeah, that was my freshman year of college. And, you know, even then there was those debates happening online, but it wasn't like it is now where it's just people can just like, it seems to me like what people do nowadays is on, especially on like Twitter and Facebook, people, it seemed to take great pride in saying the stupidest thing that they can possibly say. Like, let me just say the most outlandish thing because it's going to create engagement. And what I think is prominent now, what's different now, is that people are willing to say things that they know will be controversial, because there is this expression that bad publicity is better than no publicity. And I think there are some people that buy into that. There's people that get the dopamine hit off of that, the likes and the engagement and knowing that they've kind of gotten other people fired up. Like, there was this clown that had would just say the most just constantly just negative and just trying to pick fights on Twitter. So I blocked him, and he comes into my DMs or, you know, he goes through someone else. Hey, you know, this guy wants you to unblock him. He promises he'll be better and blah, blah. And like the day that I unblocked him, he starts going off and saying these ignorant things and taking shots. I mean, I'm like, you literally went through all that trouble just so you could get unblocked and start this again. It's like, okay, block. And I, like, whatever. Like clearly that's something that this guy seems to enjoy, is like, let me be the biggest a-hole I can be because it'll get a response from someone, and he takes pride in that. And I think that's different now. That's different, where people are more, you know, there may be more people. There may be people who do it maybe just as a shtick. You know, they're oh, you know, I got someday, I got called the other day, like a Notre Dame hater the other day, by somebody. And it wasn't that long before that I got called a homer by somebody else. And it's just like, people get their view and this is how they see the world. And anyone who isn't on their side, like, you know, got to tear you down, and they take joy in that. So I think the notion of tearing people down just in general is greater now than it was before. Absolutely. But it's always been there. It's just what's happened now is the social media has created easier avenues. Like, there's always been ignorant fans, and there's always been ignorant people when it comes to politics or race or religion or whatever, that are just like, good Lord, you know, like, how are you a functioning human being believing what you believe? And I'm not talking about you believe in Democrat policies and I believe in Republican policies, or I believe in Democrat and you believe. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, like, oh my God, like, you're an insane person. Like what is wrong with you? And you see so much more of that now. And I don't know that it's more prominent than it used to be. I just think there's a platform for it now. And I do believe that it creates some people that start to say, hey, I've got to generate a persona. Like, I've been asked this before. Are you really that way? Or is that your persona? And I'm like, what do you mean persona? Like, why would I create a fake version of myself to put forth to other people? Like, why would you do that? But apparently a lot of people do that. Like, well, off the air, he's this way. Well, then why isn't he that way on the air? Like, you hear this about some of the personalities. He is. Well, he's not like that in real life. That's his persona. I'm like, well, unless you're an actor playing a role that's not you, but if you're putting this is me and this is my name, then why would you, you know, I've heard people say this about Stephen A. Smith and about Skip Bayless and about like, well, he's not really that way in real life. And I'm like, well, then stop acting like that on your show. Like, just be yourself. Don't put on a persona. But I think what has been created when you look at a lot of this stuff is you see a lot more people that feel that I have to do something different to get noticed. And I think that's very sad. And yeah. I think that's very sad. So I just think it's more prominent now. it is. I think it's more prominent now. I think people now have more platforms to be ignorant, and that feeds it. Because like if I'm an idiot and nobody listens to me and in my home, and I don't have social media, I don't have Facebook, I don't have Twitter, I don't have all these things, and it's just like it used to be 40 years ago, then you're just kind of that little weird guy that hangs out in his basement. Now that guy has a platform. Like Sebastian Maniscalco has a great skit about that, about how the internet is like, you know, if you're someone who dresses up like likes to dress up like a baby, you know, now you type in the internet and there's all these people that like to dress up like a baby, you know, and it's just like, there's always been those kind of odd people. It's just now there's platforms that you can connect with other odd people, or there's platforms that you can say, hey, I can say whatever ignorant thing I want. I can hide behind the anonymity of it. You know, I've said this, if you had to put like, and I don't know that I would like this because I think if people don't have the right to be anonymous, they can. But if you had to say, okay, you can't tweet, you can be on Twitter, you can read tweets, you can read any tweet you want, you can, you know, you can follow whoever you want to follow, but you can't tweet unless you put your name, your face, and your place of employment on your Twitter profile for others to see. People would act completely different. You had to verify your name, your face, and your place of employment and where you're from. So I know that this clown that says ignorant things to me, and whether it be a DM or publicly, like, oh, okay. Like I know of a police officer in a town somewhat nearby that sent me an email and was like, wow, you're a giant homophobe. And that's kind of sad that you're a police officer. And if I knew his name and if I knew where he worked, I just knew he's a police officer. But if I knew like where he worked and what precinct, and but like, you know, if people knew who you were, like, I wonder how likely you'd be to say the things that you say. And that's kind of where we are now, is this, the anonymity has given people a lot of false courage. You're like, I promise you, you wouldn't say that to that guy's face if you had a chance. Or I promise you, you wouldn't say that to that guy who lives in your city if he knew where you lived and worked. I'm pretty sure you wouldn't do that. But it's kind of sad, but that's kind of where we are. But I think at the heart of it, there's always been that desire to tear down either successful people because I'm sad that I'm not, or to tear down other successful people because you want to prop up your successful person, right? And it's been true in sports. It's been true in you know, when we talk about actors. Why, my guy's this guy, so I got to tear down this other guy because I think my guy's this guy, right? Like, I grew up this in the 80s. It's not that, like, in it's different now, but when we were growing up, if you were a Celtics fan like I was, it's like you had to tear down Magic because I'm a Bird guy. I never did that, but like, there was that, or I got to tear down Bird because I'm a Lakers fan. Magic's my guy, so I got a Bird's overrated, Bird's this, Bird's that. I hate Bird. He sucks. He's not that good. Well, that's dumb. You can be a Magic Johnson or a Lakers fan and still be like, but that Bird dude is legit. You can be a Celtics fan and love Bird and be like, that Magic guy's legit. But that's just not how we work in a lot of ways. We just kind of want to just say whatever comes to our mind, and I'm going to defend my guy no matter what. And that's why politics is just so corrupt now. And from our standpoint, we're the problem. It's not, politicians aren't the problem. We're the problem, because I could, for 20 years, I could have a view on a subject, but the minute my party starts supporting that and the other party goes against it, now all of a sudden I've completely shifted my views. You'll see this with people that follow the two main presidential candidates. I know people that are Trump supporters that were against things a year ago that now are for it because Trump says he's for it. And I know people that are Biden supporters that are now totally for something that when Trump did it, oh, it's terrible, it's awful, it's terrible. But now that their guy does it, they support it. And that lack of just any kind of moral conviction that we have as human beings nowadays is a big reason why we have a lot of the problems that we have, because nobody has any core convictions. Nobody has any decency towards each other. You know, if you thought about, like, you know, that's a person that I'm going at, maybe you might respond differently. You know, you people that send death threats to football. Remember the kid from Ohio State that dropped that touchdown pass against Texas? This is back in 05 before Twitter was a thing. He got death threats. So let's not say that as much as I hate Twitter and social media, let's not pretend like the world was warm and fuzzy and sports fans were totally calm and normal and rational before social media came. This kid was, in the death threats he was getting were people that were sending letters to the school. They had to take the time to write a handwritten letter, put a stamp on it, put an address on it, and put it in the mail. Like, there was no filter in all those processes to say, this is probably stupid. You still had it. It's just now it's so much easier because I can just pick up my phone and blah, 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 boom. I just said something stupid, and now everyone can see how stupid I am. You know, I mean, that's just the reality of it. So that's always been there. I just think it's been nowadays, it's almost like it's praised to a degree. Stupidity is praised and honored now, right? Like there's a politician out there that I'm a big fan of who is all about getting stuff done, and he can get no traction because everybody's over here with the show over here that just drives me nuts. I'm like, there's no substance over here. Yeah, but did you see him own the libs on whatever? Like, who cares? That means nothing. Oh, they own the cons. I'm like, okay, great, but you're not actually advocating for anything you believe in. But I won the social media battle. All right. That's why we're a stupid country now, because people care more about that stuff than they care about, you know, are you doing anything to uplift the person next to you? Are you doing anything to impact your community? Are you doing anything to build this person up who's down? You know, hey, that guy dropped the pass. It could have won you a game. If you take the time to write a letter, how about saying, hey man, tough break, but we love you. Thank you for everything you do for us. And you know, whatever. No, we can't do that. We got to send hate mail. We got to tell people they're bums and they suck and they're terrible. That's what it's come to. That's always been there. It's just so much more normal now. It's normalized now. It's like people literally grift off that now. And it's just like, okay, I'm out. I'm checked out of all that stuff because it's just sad. I went off on that long tangent, and I'm sure like most of you didn't want to hear any of that, but that's just kind of what it comes from. It's really sad. And social media has made it worse, but it was always there. It was always there. D. Chavez, do you think they'll offer Dia Bell? I do not. I think they liked Dia Bell early, but I think there are just other guys on the board that A, they like better, and B, they think they have a better shot at getting. So that to me is kind of where they are.